Phil in Canada is a constant on Market to Market. He submits questions for our discussion, and he has sent two the last couple of weeks that we are finally discussing on the program, on the roundtable, about basis when it comes to borders and how thickening borders can be troublesome for not only basis, but also just commerce in general, as the COVID-19 continues to uncover new issues that we hadn't thought of. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the M2M Podcast, by the way, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Thank you so very much for listening. Phil Shaw is a frequent contributor to DTN with his writings, and he's had a lot of time to sit at home as he has been under self-quarantine in his home in Dresden, Ontario. We hear what he has been thinking about, what he's been seeing, and how he has been trying to conduct his farm as he prepares, like many of you, for spring planting. We'll also discuss some of the travel that he did before we were all shut down here in March. We'll also talk about trade, as there was this little tiny thing called the USMCA, and he'll tell you what they call it in Canada. And we'll also discuss the virus, how it's impacting him, both professionally and business-wise, as well as personally. So enjoy. Here is Phil Shaw on this week's M2M Podcast. Phil, I think the last time we chatted, I realized we could have spent the entire time talking about the NBA. What's life been like without the NBA for you?
Well, it's been difficult. However, you try to keep it in perspective. Because when I'm not farming or I'm not writing something, I'm usually watching a game, even a couple of them at night. And, you know, it's just so unusual, this world we're in, because everything's gone. Whether you watch basketball or whether you were looking forward to baseball or March Madness or all these things, everything is gone, whether it was going to church or whether it was, any type of social interaction, it's all gone. So, you know, when you think of the farm world, a lot of our world is self-isolating naturally. But when everything else is gone, it's so unusual, you know, it's so unusual.
Well, you bring up a couple of points there that we all have had to kind of deal with and comprehend. Yes, sports and perspective. I know you've seen it on social media, the picture of the entertainers and the sports people. See, we don't need them in our world, but it is a sense of entertainment and a distraction from our lives. Sure. I forget, family-wise, do you have anybody still at home or are they all off around the world?
Well, that's one reason I have to go to Toronto today, because I have one of my daughters has a new job in Toronto, and it just so happens she has to move. And Toronto is the hot spot for COVID-19, and so that's what I'll be doing in the next 2 days, and washing my hands like crazy. But so I have one daughter that lives locally. I've got a daughter married with a little grandson, and then her twin sister is the one moving to Toronto, or she lives in Toronto. She's home now, but going to Toronto. Then my wife Cindy is here. So, you know, and then I farm and write. So, you know, I've got just as many concerns as anybody else. I've got an 89-year-old mother in a nursing home. We're having problems with nursing homes here in Ontario with regard to COVID-19. And, you know, so everybody has concerns and everybody's at risk, right? So
they are. And, you know, watching the news in the United States, it always focuses on two cities, New York and Washington, D.C. And we keep hearing stories that are just very serious out of New York. How does that translate across? I mean, are you hearing mostly about what's going on in Montreal and Toronto and Saskatchewan versus Washington and New York and Paris and, you know, wherever?
Well, as you know, I am in Ontario. I am only about 70 miles from Detroit, Michigan. And we have about 8,500 or 8,600 cases of COVID-19 here in Canada that have been identified. And the hot spots here are Ontario and Quebec. Quebec is the big hot spot and where the most cases are. And, you know, we're very concerned about the United States simply because New York is a hot spot, and so is Michigan. And they border on our largest provinces. And there's some theories that that, you know, that's one reason that Quebec is such a hot spot now, because their spring break was a little bit earlier than most spring break. And of course, Canadians love to travel to the United States and Florida. So all these people coming back in Europe, they came back from Europe. And so that's where a lot of our cases have come from travel. But now, apparently, half our cases are through community spread. So, you know, we're very concerned with our American friends and the problems that we're having there in places like New York and Michigan and other places. And as you know, the American president said the next 2 weeks are going to be pretty rough. So,
and that follows what he was a lot more, as he said, wanted to be more optimistic. And now it's much more of a serious thing. Real quickly on your going into Toronto, are there any restrictions or things that, I mean, yes, you said washing your hands quite a lot, but you're going to be allowed in? I would assume I'm not allowed in coming from the United States. But what are restrictions Toronto's having right now?
Well, we are locked down just like most of the United States is. Like, for instance, Michigan, which is just west of me, they canceled schools for this year.
Yeah, I had a cousin, his kid, he's out of school.
And but that, they did it for the whole year. Maybe they'll start up in September, who knows. But so we're locked down too. We're under self-isolation. I've actually been under quarantine until today, 14 days, and because I was away and I had to come back. But everything's locked down, self-isolation, the 2 meters or 6 feet distance is required. It's against the law to be in a group of bigger than five. Now, apparently Quebec, it's even more stringent. They're stopping people on the major highways, especially people coming back in RVs and things, and they're telling them to self-isolate for 14 days. When I came back from the United States 15 days ago, I was given instructions that I was required to self-isolate simply because of, well, you know the rules. It's the same thing in the United States. And so everything is locked down. And you know, but of course, our economies, you know what the American economy is like. I mean, it's a robust place, and then suddenly it stops. Well, my goodness, and that's kind of where we're at. And the agricultural economy is the same way. And, of course, the United States and Canada are the biggest trading partners for agricultural products. And, you know, that's one thing we've mused about is that border thickening. So just because of all these restrictions. And so, you know, it's very restrictive. But on the farm, for example, it's hardly any different for me because I work by myself. And if I have a delivery come, I can stay 2 meters away. And you know, it just takes a lot more planning and some more contingency plans.
We have a video that was shot yesterday, video that was shot last week of implement dealers with signs that said stop. Or Tim Defoe, we were talking last week, and he said, the parts will be left on the curb or outside the doors. I assume same thing for you?
Very much the same thing. Like, for instance, I've been in quarantine for 2 weeks, so I needed some oil filters. And the first thing I thought about was, okay, I need some oil filters. And then I thought, well, really, do I need the oil filters or not? Can I push that down the road a little bit? And I did for a while. And then what happened was, is I phoned the oil company, because I didn't have enough oil, and they dropped some oil off. And then when I got the oil, I made arrangements for the oil filters to be picked up by somebody else. And they went and got the oil filters and dropped them off on my farm. And I got along fine. But I mean, yes, the restrictions you're talking about and the difference that is happening in farm country are translated here into Canada. Because my farm is not much different than a farm in Michigan or Ohio or Indiana. You know, farms get bigger as you go west. And so it was interesting yesterday, an American farmer on Twitter, I think it was Brian Scott, said, do we have to have, he made mention about a COVID-19 plan for his own farm. And he mentioned that there's just two of him. And so they better have a plan if somebody gets sick or gets the illness. And then I mentioned to him, well, it's only me. So, you know, I have to have a contingency plan, too. So this is changing the way we farm.
And you would think that at the beginning, you know, the jokes aside, that it wasn't going to matter. Because, as you said, farmers are self-isolated more than normal, than the average person in a job. But you're coming at the time of year where there's interaction. Yes, your seed, is your seed bagged or is it in the tubs?
Yeah, well, mine is in bags because I don't grow as much as large growers do. So there's all those issues with regard to that. But going beyond that for a minute, how about the hog producers? How about the hogs? How about the people with cattle? How about the horticulture people who rely on food processing? Like, for instance, I do a lot of writing here in Eastern Canada. So typically I'll have farmers send me email. And they send me email concerned about hog plants shutting down because there's so much COVID-19 in it that realistically, the food, the hog processing plant, they can't effectively process, right?
Right.
Well, you know how the number of hogs in Iowa, you know how that would back up on farms. And what do you do at a certain point? Like, for instance, we had a large hog plant in Quebec closed down this past week. And we've had them in, and so this is a difficult thing. And so you're right. Maybe we imagined that we could walk through this, and we have, but it's getting more difficult. It's getting thicker. I mean, it's harder to walk through. And if I could snap my fingers and be to the end of June and have a crop planted and have it up, and that would be a great thing. But we have to walk through this somehow. And it's difficult, as you know, because look at the numbers in Canada, look at the numbers in the United States. I hate to, in fact, I don't put blame on anybody simply because we're probably all guilty to some extent. Like, I mean, I've traveled a lot this winter. I was in Bangladesh and the Maldives earlier. I think you posted me speaking at the university in Bangladesh. And I remember at night we'd watch the coverage from China. And we're going, oh, my goodness, isn't that awful? Well, my goodness, here we are.
Here we are just a few months later. We keep dancing around the thickening discussion. Let's get into a little bit. You've had a couple of questions as you've had time to reflect, I guess, there in your isolated in Dresden there. You wrote an article, U.S.-Canada border thickening may affect Eastern Canadian grain pricing. What was the reason for writing that?
Well, the reason I wrote that, I've been thinking about this for a while. Naturally, in the United States and Canada, our grain prices are related. And you have a regular guest on Market to Market, Angie Setzer, who's an expert on how this works from Michigan to Ontario, and I often talk to her about it. And a lot of it has to do with replacing grain on both sides of the border. So, for instance, where I farm, you'll actually have a truck pick up corn, drive 17 miles to Michigan, unload the corn in a U.S. ethanol plant. They'll drive 2 miles from the ethanol plant in Michigan, pick up corn and drive it back here where I am and dump the corn. Well, that doesn't make much sense when you think about it, but it all has to do with basis values, right? So this, we have a seamless border here, Canada and the United States, for grain. It's mostly that for livestock as well, and agriculture and food products, where both are our largest trading partner. So, you know, it is what it is. We have our trade problems and different things that go on. But we have the U.S. MCA. We call it CUSMA in Canada, Canada-U.S. Trade Agreement. But now we have this COVID-19, and the border's been closed to non-essential traffic. So that means, Paul, that I can't visit you, and you can't visit me. Okay, because that's not essential. I can't go to anything I want to in Detroit, which is very normal for me. But everything else should be fine. But what is happening is that's not necessarily the case. We found an 82% decrease in the number of Americans coming to Canada, and we're seeing a decrease of about a 25% in U.S.-Canada trade across the border. So what happens as these borders thicken? And it's not only the U.S.-Canadian border. It's also borders at Brazil and Argentina and other places where workers are more reticent to work at ports to load ships. And so the movement of grain slows down. Now, in a place like Brazil, that probably has a detrimental effect on domestic cash prices. However, in Canada, it would be the opposite. For instance, in Eastern Canada, if you can't replace Ontario corn or Quebec corn with Iowa corn, then what happens? Well, the domestic price goes up simply because the borders become too thick to get it through efficiently. For instance, in Quebec earlier this year, they had quality issues. And so they imported trains of corn from Iowa. And that's fairly common that that happens. It, you know, it's just the, how basis works. You know how basis works, those basis maps I put up. However, if the border becomes too thick and it becomes too costly or too much of a problem to ship, and that's what we have now. We have a pandemic, and you know, it's almost science fiction, you know, when we think of 2020 and with all our technology, and can't we get over on this, you know? But you know, we know the difficulty of it. But the point of it is, my point has been, and that's one reason that I wrote that piece for DTN, was simply because I see this as a real issue. The border's not shut down, but it's thickening. In other words, it's like you and I walking across a field that's muddy. We can't do it as quickly as we used to do it. And, you know, in places like Ontario, Quebec, these grain prices may change accordingly, depending on how that border thickens. But if you go to Brazil and Argentina and even Russia and Ukraine, where they export wheat, there's been musings out of Russia this past week of possibility of reducing grain exports. Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to do that, but it's going to be happening naturally anyway, you know. And, of course, every week you have an excellent show. I listen to the market commentary, you know, and I'm just wondering if the futures market is what it is. Generally, you see basis levels change based on local supply and demand. But I'm just wondering if this will become more of a thing. And as COVID-19 peaks in North America and in Europe, you would think it would be. It certainly is already here in the U.S. and Canadian border, which is the largest commercial border in the world and the biggest for agriculture and food in the United States and Canada. So that's what I was talking about.
Well, it's an absolute important issue, and trying to understand it in the places you mentioned, you know, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, to an extent, people don't realize the travel if you're not in that area, the commerce that goes on back and forth. And I think people, I'm sure most farmers know their grain ends up somewhere that's not within 10 miles of their backyard. It's not all going to a cattle lot or a hog lot or that ethanol plant 20 miles away. It is going on a train, and it is going. This is a what if, and this is, I don't think we'll get there, and I'm not trying to sound an alarm that we're going to get there, but what if they deem essential commerce not only stops between countries, Phil, but stops between states? That Iowa is self-contained, Michigan is self-contained. That could, if this gets worse, terribly worse, could happen, right? Or am I too far out there?
First of all, I don't know, but that's what they did in China.
Yeah,
you know, it's but they, you know, we have huge cultural and political differences between our societies. In China, Wuhan is no more infections. In fact, they're deconstructing the hospitals. However, there's quite a time lag. But what they did is they did things that in our society would probably be impractical. For instance, they forcibly isolated people. They had drones flying over neighborhoods telling people to get inside. You know, just because of the nature of the government, they have more power to shut people down. So to even muse about whether you are right or not, it's hard for us to believe that, but that's a big thickening of the border if that happens, even within the United States. And I think there might have been some thoughts about that earlier, because Iowa, for instance, is not New York State. You know, Wyoming is not New York State. Montana is not New York State. And however, it looks like the American administration is not going to do that now based on the spread of the disease. So the bottom line is we're dealing with something that is a once-in-a-lifetime thing or more. It's interesting. I spoke in Prince Edward Island just before the pandemic got declared. And I talked about my uncle, my great-uncle, who fought in World War I for the Canadian forces and got through that terrible episode only to die in the Spanish flu of 1918-1919. He never got home. He was only 20 years old. And he survived that terrible war only to die from the last pandemic. That was 102 years ago. And, at the end of the day, maybe we will survive it much better. If you look at the Chinese death toll versus the Spanish flu, I mean, obviously we're talking about two different things. But still, it's very difficult for people. And as we walk through this, the American president has told us expect some rough sledding in the next 2.5 weeks.
And I'm not saying, again, I'm not going to second guess here, but if we hear that earlier from leadership of how seriousness it was from both parties, I just wonder if we would approach things differently. I know I look around my neighborhood and in a suburb of Des Moines that it is, I don't see the activity. Now, I have a major retail area right behind me about a block. I still hear the same amount of traffic. I do intentionally. I've stayed in my house. I've been able to go in to work on Fridays to record the show. We're going in today just because we have to test something out for the show because we're doing a different approach to it. I still see a lot of commerce. Maybe not commerce, but I see traffic. Maybe people are just in their cars. But I've seen the photos of Times Square. I've seen the photos of Boston Common. I've seen these of areas I've been to and know there's a lot of foot traffic that's just not happening. The density of a New York, same number, not quite the same number of population, but think of a Los Angeles. Los Angeles has had they've had it earlier. And they've had less of a widespread. Does that mean that they're doing it better? Or is it the density factor? You know, Washington State, you look at Seattle, they've been able to shut down a lot of that community. So there's a whole lot of factors that we're not going to understand and know in real time. But, man, how'd you like to be at university right now trying to figure out your PhD? You've got all these things to pick from right now. Economics, public health, transportation, you name it, to study this, we will absolutely read and learn more about this in years to come.
No question about that. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote about what it would be like in the post-COVID-19 economy. First of all, we know the economy will be a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Simply because growth rates are going to be negative in this quarter. And the agricultural economy will be a lot smaller. Will you and I want to go to a baseball game or a basketball game and sit there with other people? Well, eventually we probably will, but initially we'll probably be a little bit reticent about things like that. It is likely that it is also like just the economy is going to change post-COVID-19, and we'll just have to see what that's like. But with regard to you noticing the traffic around Iowa, it's very noticeable here. Like it's shut down. Like it's. I'm going to Toronto today. Don't really want to. I'm even nervous about the law because you know, like you're allowed to do things that are necessary. I've got farm plates on a truck, and farmers are called an essential service. But things are really shut down here. I noticed a lot less commerce. You know, and.
You said your daughter has a new job, or is it just a new place? Sure. Okay, so was she concerned at all about that job lasting? Or is that one? Yeah. I mean, I get concerned about anybody that started a new position to know if that's going to last.
Yeah, she definitely has been concerned of all of the above. And the company has assured her, no, that she'll be able to work from home. And she's in digital marketing and kind of the high-tech stuff, and maybe there's growth, a growth industry into that now. But yeah, we're concerned of all of the above. It's just that we have to move out of a place in Toronto. We've already extended that a little while. We have a moving company supposed to do that. But they phoned me and told me that their guys are self-isolating. They can't do it. So that leaves me. And, you know, I mean, I've slugged a lot of grain in my life. And I can go and do this, but I don't prefer it anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And, yeah. So all of the above with regard to that. very concerned. And you know, there's everything in between. Like, you've got something going on today with some new technology. Probably you wouldn't have planned that under if you knew there was a pandemic. I mean, there's a lot of things like that, but it's very noticeable here.
Yeah.
In Ontario and Quebec. Like, for instance, I got a note from a fellow trucking soybeans into Quebec the other day, seed soybeans. And he was stopped on the freeway, and he was asked many questions about his health. And they were stopping RVs the same way because they're trying to get people to self-isolate, and if it's not necessary, don't do it. And that is such a big thing to think about, right?
You know? It is, and I hope we have flattened the curve. We hope that we go over and see my in-laws that are 3 blocks away. I have yet to be within 4 feet of them and even get nervous, as they're both north of 70. The kids go over and they sit on the deck. And I said, you do not go on the house. That's just the way it is. We've seen people sit in driveways and converse with a neighbor, and some of those that are social. I've had more meetings. I'm used to talking to people. But in person, I've had more of these computer meetings than I've wanted to. You've seen the difference in the show. For us not to have somebody come into the building is unheard of. In 45 years, we've never done a satellite except once with Chet. So that's that. But CBS this morning, they're all three of the main hosts. They're in their own places. And they were one of the last ones to still be in a place. They had moved from Black Rock or West 57th into the Stephen Colbert studio. I know that CNN's been doing it, CNBC, Fox's. It is just from what I see. Okay, you mentioned one thing, the economy change and wins and losses in relationship to sport. There's an article out of Boston. The owner of the Bruins had laid off a whole bunch of people, and there was a call for, well, that's the last time we give that business any type of public support for his business, because he's worth billions of dollars. How can he not weather the storm? There's going to be some of that real fast going on here, of those that can maybe financially weather some things that are owners. I'm afraid that could get loud as we kind of get stuck inside longer for the rest of this month. We're going to see that debate.
Yes, unfortunately we are, and it's a very difficult debate to talk about with regard to those who have and have not in our societies. I just got back from Bangladesh about a month and a half ago, and where they have 160 million people in the size of half of Iowa, you know, and very poor country. And what do those people do? What do the people in India do? What do the people in Africa do? And what do the people that are poor in the United States and Canada do? So, yes, this disease is not going to discriminate. And with regard to that particular issue of laying off employees and sporting events, and to transcend that, to go into hogs and cattle and grain and the different responsibilities everybody has, the people that own the processing plants, it's just a very uneven time. And when I write, I talk about uncharted waters. And like, I got a note from an editor yesterday telling me that the publishing house is at risk because everything's falling down, right? Inquiring about how much more that I can put out based on the resources that they give to me. So it's uncharted water, Paul.
It is. And you talked about the economy and the digital marketing with your daughter. That was another article I read this morning talking about, yes, the economy, yes, will be smaller, like you said, but who wins and who loses in this, and how they can respond to a lockdown. That will be pretty much, I think, what they were trying to say is the mall is dead. You know, that retail space is in big trouble.
Yeah, but the things that you and I chat about on Market to Market, like hogs and cattle and cotton and soybeans and corn and wheat, I mean, you know, we're going to try to keep that going, but there's going to be mostly losers. Maybe not in the agricultural sector, but there will be there as well. But the greater economy, it's going to shrink. And we know that.
Yeah.
We're not used to negative economic growth. I always talk about positive economic growth as being a very good thing, and it is. We talk about a recession being two successive quarters of negative growth, but, you know, and what happens with negative growth is the economy gets smaller, so there's less jobs, there's less economic activity. In Africa, we see countries with negative economic growth. That's why they have so many different problems. China's used to have double-digit growth. Places like Bangladesh, it's close to that too in India. So, you know, it's just such uncharted water. And I hope it doesn't become one man for themselves. But the American president has said it's going to be a rough 2.5 weeks and probably a rough April. And we're just going to have to get through it somehow. And everybody's going to have to stay healthy because everybody's at risk.
Real quickly before we go, you mentioned Kuzma. USMCA in this country. Canada was the last to sign off on one hurdle, but we're now going to have implementation likely delayed into July or August. What's some of the chatter about this trade agreement between these three countries?
Well, we call it the Canada-U.S. Trade Agreement, so CUSTA, I guess you'd call it.
Oh, but, CUSTA. Sorry, I misheard you earlier. Sorry, CUSTA.
But USMCA is what everybody hears about. You know, frankly, in Canada, we were not, this was not even on the radar before the election of our current American president. And we have had free trade with the United States since 1989 when Ronald Reagan negotiated it with our former prime minister. And so our economies became very, very integrated. And, you know, there was hardly any talk about this, you know, at all. Up until the election of our president, of Mr. Trump. So now that we have it here, the biggest differences here would be steel and aluminum, as well as a small erosion of our dairy market. And it's always interesting for me when you talk to Naomi Bloom and you ask her about milk prices, because nobody talks about that here. They just go constantly up over time. Okay, and it's all based on supply management or limited to service our domestic market. That was all sustained between the USMCA and the USMCA. There's a small erosion of it, but you still have the problems in Wisconsin with low milk prices, and we still have a consistent increase in the milk price over time. The steel and aluminum tariffs that were put on by both countries were a result of you know, whatever. I don't want to get into the political reasons of it because we had free trade in steel and aluminum, and now we don't. So even though Canadian aluminum is in American warplanes serving in NATO and vice versa, there seems to be a direction from this American administration not to change that. And so I would say that that's the biggest issue. But you had mentioned briefly about how implementation is and things. COVID-19 will affect that, but probably not in any particular debilitating way, because we've had free trade since 1989. Mr. Trump came in and he had a certain view of it, and that's fine. And things were changed a bit, but not very much, really.
Right.
Steel and aluminum is the one thing, and with regard to the agricultural sector, like grain will still flow across the U.S.-Canadian border just like it always has. And there will always be some tension with regard to livestock movement. You know, sometimes a Canadian calf is born and it's raised in Montana and it's fattened up in Alberta and it's sold into a packing plant in North Dakota, and then the meat sold back into Ontario. So, you know, to try to explain that, you know, to other people that politicians, for instance, who are not quite aware of that, and it becomes an emotional argument, because all the years of writing to American farmers, and I've got quite a wide American audience, the one tension always seems to be from the beef groups regarding things like that, and it'll never change.
Well, one thing that won't change is that we enjoy speaking with you, Phil. Thank you so very much for making time for us this morning.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Good luck in Toronto, and get those hands washed, okay? Take care of yourself.
You stay healthy, too, and I'll be watching.
All right. Thank you so much, Phil.
Thanks, Paul.
As always, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send me an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you for listening.